You're listening to Idaho Matters. I'm Gemma Gaudette. Recent research by the Idaho State Board of Education found that our state's annual teacher turnover rate of 10% exceeds the national rate of 8%. In fact, in 2017, 1,613 teachers here in Idaho left the profession. About 80% left teaching for reasons other than retirement. And based on the number of educator certificates issued every year, Idaho should have a teacher surplus of 500 to 1,000 teachers. However, about one-third of our state's newly certified teachers don't even take jobs here in Idaho. So what's going on? Why are new teachers leaving? And why can't we keep experienced long-term teachers in the classroom? Joining me live to discuss this more are Carrie Overhaul. She is the president of the Idaho Education Association, and Rob Winslow, executive director of the Idaho Association of School Administrators. Welcome to the program.
Thanks. Great to be here.
Thank you.
So both of you penned a joint op-ed recently looking into really why are more seasoned teachers, as you say, have been ignored. So, Carrie, maybe start with you about, you know, why that is.
So as we look at the career ladder, the plan, the pay, how we pay teachers in the state, the largest portion of that investment has gone into early career educators, getting the starting teacher salary up to $40,000 with the 2021 school year. But they haven't put money at that top end for those veteran educators. And so as we look at the career ladder ending and needing a plan going forward, we want to advocate for what's next. How are we going to invest in our most experienced educators?
And in that op-ed, you do say that the career ladder is helping new teachers, but more needs to be done for those experienced teachers. So when we talk about that, I mean, do these experienced teachers, you know, cap out right now? I mean, can they only make a certain amount? I mean, how does that work?
Well, when you look at the career ladder, it's actually an allocation model, which means that's what the state sends. So when you go to most districts, they have to come up with their own money to pay them a higher amount. And so one of the issues that we brought up is the fact that 90-some school districts now have supplemental levies to try to pay people more. But if you know, the idea of a career ladder initially was 40, 50, 60, and the state, I kind of reference it as they got to a career step stool because it only has one rung. So you go 40, 50, and that's it. And we still haven't hit 40. So we're just trying to encourage right now that efforts that we're building up the beginning and then to move on up to that top tier and to hopefully get up to that 60, add that third rung.
And talk to me about the value of these experienced long-term teachers.
So experienced educators mentor early career educators coming into the profession. They can share their knowledge and expertise with those teachers and serve as role models. They also have that experience, which allows them to help students succeed at higher levels as well. And we believe that every district should be able to recruit and retain those educators. We don't want to see there becoming these districts that have a better ability to recruit because they are putting more money into what the state's providing versus districts that can't pass a levy that don't. And so we see this as making sure there's equity between rural and urban and small and large across the state.
So talk more about that, because as soon as you said the districts that can afford to do more, you think of those big, large school districts. However, so much of our state is rural. So are those teachers funneling out, looking for better opportunities? I mean, especially when we look at our turnover rate being higher than the national average, Rob.
And so when you actually look around the state, people I talk to, superintendents and how they attract and retain, you have Idaho, as you know, we have, I think, about six other states right neck bordering Idaho. Well, that creates different tension. You're in eastern Idaho and they can go to Wyoming and make a lot more. So there's that pressure. You have northern Idaho, they walk across, you know, within miles of Washington, and they can get 10, 20% more. Oregon pays more. So you have all these pressure points that influence that, as well as you have small districts. Even if they try to go get a supplemental, their property value is so low, they can't get enough to pay people, build buildings, or pay teachers. And so one of the efforts that Carrie and I are talking about and certainly working on is trying to get the state to pick up that responsibility. The whole point of the career ladder was to, as we talked about, is so that all districts could have enough to attract good and retain teachers. And so that's the effort. And the legislators, governor, are trying to address it. We're just trying to encourage them to keep on that effort, and certainly with the task force to address the finally that extra rung mm-hmm. and to take care of people.
I'm speaking with Carrie Overall, president of the Idaho Education Association, and Rob Winslow, executive director of the Idaho Association of School Administrators. And I do want to get back to the education task force, but I want to ask this question first. Because, again, going back to your op-ed, when the state passed HB 293 this last legislative session, which set the minimum salary for that first-rung educator at $42,500, in the op-ed, you actually say this caused some confusion. So talk to me about that. It caused some confusion for school districts, you said, Carrie.
Yeah, for the first time, they mandated a minimum salary amount outside of that first year of teaching. And for many districts, they may or may not have been paying that amount. We believe all educators should be compensated at a high level, but we also believe that districts need to have the flexibility to negotiate a contract and negotiate salaries that make sense for their district. And so legislators have told us it wasn't their intent to mandate an amount on that first rung of the professional ladder, but different people have interpreted different ways. And so we look forward to collaborating with legislators to ensure mm-hmm. flexibility remains for districts to develop salary schedules that make sense for their locals. And I think Rob would agree with that as well.
It's actually caused, I had an email today from a superintendent in a very small district and confusion on what to do, you know, and Carrie and I, and we've worked with the State Department, all these entities, lawyers trying to figure out, legislators, because they've actually said we have it in the bill, but we didn't mean it. Well, it's a law.
Well, it's so in the bill.
So then lawyers say if it's written, they do mean it. And so I just had a superintendent today going, please help me. Do I have to pay him this? Can I pay him? It's very confusing. Mm-hmm. And so, as Carrie said, the state historically has always set the beginning salary. But then in the middle of the schedule, they set another benchmark, which has kind of thrown districts off. And so it was an unfortunate hiccup that has caused quite a few issues, especially when they don't have a lot of money. Some districts were already paying that, wasn't an issue, mm-hmm. but we're hoping that that isn't a precedent going forward.
So with Governor Little's new education task force, first off, talk to me about that for people who may not be aware that there has been a task force formed and what the goal of that is.
So the original governor's task force was formed after the 2011 right. Props 1 were overturned. And so it created a five-year plan for public education for what goals, what things we wanted to happen. We're finishing the fifth year of the career ladder, which really was one of the strong points of the governor's task force recommendations. And so now looking forward, what's our next 5 to 10 year vision for public education? And Governor Little is a new governor, and he believes that we need to invest in public education. He has expressed that commitment strongly. And so getting all stakeholders together in a room to look at what have we done with the original task force recommendations? What do we still need to improve on? And what more do we hope to accomplish and work toward with public education? And so this is a great opportunity for everyone to be in the room, have those conversations, and really set a vision for public education in Idaho.
What do you think are the most critical issues that the task force should be looking at? There's so many.
No. You know, it's we've just got done with the session looking at the school funding formula. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of things proposed. A bill was never produced that was passed. And so that's still kind of a hanging issue of to deal with how they're going to distribute money to schools. With this op-ed, you know, Carrie and I are certainly in agreement. I think the teacher salary is the number one issue that mm-hmm. we've got to address. The other issue that I see, and I'm going to go to my thinking of the rural schools, is really a facility issue. We've got a lot of rural schools who have really sad, to me, inadequate facilities, and they don't have the ability to even bond. There's some issues in Idaho where you can't even go to the public. Let's say you're in a little community, and maybe the property value, you can simply only levy at a rate to get, say, $20 million, and you need $30 million for a high school. You can't even then go and get enough. And so I think one of the issues that needs to occur is looking at, you know, adequate facilities for all children mm-hmm. in rural schools, charter schools, all schools that kids should have a right to have a good school.
And what about equity in education for all kids in Idaho?
Exactly. So as I thought about my top 10, so teacher recruitment and retention obviously is number one priority. We have to look at how we retain educators, as shared by your statistics at the beginning. But tying it to that equity piece, every student, regardless of where they live in this state, should have access to a quality education in terms of courses they can take, in terms of a quality teacher that they can access, a safe school environment where they can be educated in. All of those pieces play into how do we meet our constitutional mandate of a thorough and uniform system of public education in this state. And really, the task force needs to be focused on ensuring that every student gets access to those things.
And I know that with Governor Little putting education first, I mean, he said that in his State of the State, that was obvious within this legislative session. But do you think that lawmakers are on board with this? I mean, what is the stumbling block? Because we are lacking when it comes to teacher pay, when it comes to equity. I mean, every child should have the right to a good education in this state.
Well, so when we look at education, Idaho has invested a lot of money the last 5 years. And I think a lot of educators see that price tag and see the hundreds of millions they've invested and think that they have done enough. But when we look at the statistics, and as our op-ed points out, Idaho is still 44th in the nation in teacher pay. We're still 51st now in per pupil funding. So despite these investments that we've made in public education, every other state around us has also invested in public education. And we have to do more and say, yes, we've invested a lot, but we need to invest a lot more if we're going to overcome those statistics that we see.
Did we just fall behind at some point? And now it's that idea of, okay, now you have to catch up, especially as you pointed out, Rob, when you can go across the border and make more money or you leave the profession entirely.
Right. So during the recession, a lot of places went backwards or went behind, and we certainly fell behind then as a state. We were already behind, you know, which is kind of our place in the pecking order of educational funding. So then when we had the freeze, a lot of budgets were not only frozen but cut. And so that certainly impacted districts. The greatest thing about the last task force coming out of the recession was we were focused, the legislative branch, executive branch, the stakeholder groups. I've lobbied long enough to be where we really have no focus down there to now you have a focus. This task force, it's an amazing opportunity to get all the stakeholders and policymakers together moving in the same direction. Idaho has limited funds for education, limited amounts of money. You know, it's a conservative state, but if we can funnel it in the right places, I think we can make, you know, hopefully progress in addressing some of these issues. And so that's kind of my hope, and it's excited. I'm glad Carrie's on the task force. We have some superintendents, board members, different people, but it's a rare opportunity for a state to actually get their act together in this issue. Most states do not do this. So to have Idaho look at doing it again, I think is a great opportunity to try to make sure, because they're going to put money toward education. You might as well put it in the right places and to maximize the impact on equity and salary and things to build a good system.
And that's the key right there. Put the money in the right place.
Yep, absolutely.
I want to thank both of you for coming in today and talking about this. My guest today, Carrie Overall, president of the Idaho Education Association, and Rob Winslow, executive director of the Idaho Association of School Administrators. Thanks so much for the conversation.
Thanks, Jim. It was great.
Thanks, Jim.
Up next, sports as medicine. I'm Gemma Gaudet. You're listening to Idaho Matters.